because that stuff's out there now. That information's there. And the other piece of information that's out there now, and it's been there for a while, but even more now in the internet age and social media age, is in the estate planning context, right? We can look at celebrity estate plans and celebrity estate stories for information about planning our own estates and do's and don'ts. So I thought it would be a fun way to talk about some things that we can do or not do based on some celebrity estate planning nightmares and discover what they can teach us about our own estate plans. And so let's get right to it. So the first one on my list, we're going to go through 8 or 9, I think, celebrity estates, and we're going to talk about the celebrity a little bit and what happened, the value of the estate, and some things that we can learn from it.
You are listening to the Legacy Talk podcast hosted by James A. Jones, attorney at law and founder of Sound Legacy Law, PLLC in Tacoma. Attorney Jones is here to talk about how to best protect your family, assets, and wealth. Pulling stories from his more than 20 years of helping families and business owners protect their assets, create their estate plans, preserve their wealth, and plan for the future. Nobody wants to think about estate planning, but life has a way of sneaking up on you. And at any moment, something unexpected could happen that will leave you regretting not having acted sooner. So join Attorney James A. Jones in the Legacy Talk podcast, and together learn how to plan for your future today and have peace of mind tomorrow.
Welcome to Legacy Talk. I'm your host, James Jones. I'm an estate planning and probate attorney in Tacoma, Washington. I've been practicing for over 20 years, and my main practice areas include estate planning, probate, and estate administration. On Legacy Talk, we discuss topics surrounding families and estates. Estate planning can often be a confusing and complicated topic, but my goal with this podcast is to make it understandable and accessible to those who need it. So if this is something that interests you, I'd appreciate it if you click the subscribe button and like this episode so that you can follow along as we break down the barriers to estate planning. I'm excited to get to today's topic, which is a little different for us. Today's topic is, what can we learn from celebrity estate nightmares? Because we can learn a lot from other people's mistakes with regard to our own estate plans. Okay. So on today's show, we're talking about what can we learn from a celebrity estate nightmare. So let's get to it. Many people in this country and all over the world are celebrity obsessed. What are they wearing? Who are they dating? What products do they buy or promote? Where do they go on vacation? I can't wait to see what beach they get to go to. What do their houses look like? I want my house to look like that. What workouts do they do? How do they get so fit? How does that guy make such big muscles? Right? And there's nothing really wrong with this. And it's something fun to follow along with our favorite actors or musicians or celebrities. It's an escape, right? It's a way to dream like, man, that would be so fun to be able to live like that, right? And to sort of get that tidbit here and there, this nugget of information about the personal life, and like how they really are, right? With this person that we may never meet in real life, right? Probably will never meet in real life. And so celebrities are like intriguing, right? And, you know, nowadays with social media and Instagram and X, or formerly known as Twitter, you know, where the celebrities post TikTok, we can see much more of their life these days, right? And some are more free with that than others. Most are probably having some person do it for them. But, you know, it's fun to see that more than we ever could before. We can dress like them now, right? We can work out like them because they all have a celebrity workout or trainer or something. You know, we can do the same diet that they do. Like, how do these actors prepare for these roles where they're super fit or strong? Or they lose all this weight? Or how do they gain all that weight for that role? So we can eat like them too, right? Because that stuff's out there now. That information's there. And the other piece of information that's out there now, and it's been there for a while, but even more now in the internet age and social media age, is in the estate planning context, right? We can look at celebrity estate plans and celebrity estate stories for information about planning our own estates and do's and don'ts. So I thought it would be a fun way to talk about some things that we can do or not do based on some celebrity estate planning nightmares and discover what they can teach us about our own estate plans. And so let's get right to it. So the first one on my list, we're going to go through 8 or 9, I think, celebrity estates. And we're going to talk about the celebrity a little bit and what happened, the value of the estate, and some things that we can learn from it. Okay. So the first one on my list is Prince. Prince was known, you know, Purple Rain, When Doves Cry, he wrote a billion songs. Like, Nothing Compares to You, Prince wrote that song for Sinead O'Connor. Or I don't know if he wrote it for her. I don't think he wrote it for her, but that's his song. But he died in 2016 at the age of 57. And his estate was worth between $200 and $300 million at the time of his death. And Prince did not have children, and he died without a will. Despite his immense wealth and complex business dealings, he did not leave a will or any form of estate plan at his death. And as a result, under Minnesota law where he lived and died, the law dictated that his estate would be distributed via in laws of intestacy, which we've talked about, which means the law that determines where things go when you don't have a will. And so his estate was divided among his 6 siblings. And so the law says distribute things to his siblings, probably because his parents weren't alive. But the problem was the absence of his will led to a protracted and expensive legal battle among potential heirs, including many people that came up and said they're related to him. You know, people always show up when they see some money there. And the estate also faced significant tax implications, estate tax implications, because he didn't have any planning in place. So $200 to $300 million of assets. He had no estate tax planning done at all. And so they took a huge portion of his estate. And the legal proceedings took years. And there's probably still things going on all these years, almost 8 years later. And because of his failure to plan, you know, they had significant expenses just for court fees and lawyer fees, probably in the hundreds of thousands into the millions, probably in attorney fees. And that delayed distribution of the estate, and it just caused a fiasco. So why am I sharing you this story of Prince? What can we learn from Prince and his estate? First thing, having an estate plan reduces fees for attorneys, fees for administration of the estate, fees for court costs, fees for executors, all of that stuff. 2, it saves taxes. So for a guy that had an estate worth $200 to $300 million to have no tax planning, you know, it's possible that he paid over 50% of his estate in taxes, which is ridiculous. We also learn that having an estate plan can reduce the time of administration of an estate. When there's a will or a trust, in better cases, the trust is defined and the administration of that trust is much cleaner than having to go through all the, you know, basically figure out who are these heirs, who's the rightful heirs, who should get what, and having the court determine that, that takes a long time. And having a functional estate plan, having an estate plan that is clear, reduces contests. So there's lots of things we can learn from Prince and the lack of his estate plan based on what happened afterwards. So the second person that we're going to talk about is Aretha Franklin. Now, her estate was estimated about $80 million, not quite as big as Prince, though her impact was significant. Like, she'd been in the business a lot longer than Prince, not quite as much money. Anyway, Aretha Franklin, otherwise known as the Queen of Soul, died from pancreatic cancer in 2018 at the age of 76. And initially, her family thought that she didn't have a will, but it turned out that there were several handwritten wills that were later discovered in her home, you know, hidden under cushions in notebooks. And these wills were dated various years, 2010, 2014, 2018. But the problem with these wills is they all conflicted with each other, conflicting instructions that were difficult to decipher. They were ambiguous and informal, that so it led to disputes among her 4 sons and other relatives who disagreed as to how the estate should be distributed. So this situation involved multiple court hearings again to determine the validity of these handwritten wills and significantly delayed the settlement of her estate. So what can we learn from Aretha Franklin's estate issue. The main thing that we're going to learn and point out on this is have an attorney draft your will. Particularly, you know, I don't know if I have any celebrity listeners, but I don't think I do. Probably not based on the level of listenership I have. We're building it, right? We're building. Tell your friends. Have an attorney draft your will. Handwritten wills are not always valid in all states. And in most cases, these handwritten wills are basically say, oh, I've had these cases where we've had handwritten instructions or what they say is a handwritten will, but they're not signed properly. They're not executed properly. They don't have witnesses. Because many times these handwritten wills still need to have the same formalities that a traditional will does, or typed out attorney drafted will. Like it has to be witnessed and has to be notarized and all these kinds of things, right? And so handwritten wills rarely work. I have one story where I had a case where the will was written in Wyoming. It was a handwritten will. And under Wyoming law, it was valid. The person that died was here in Washington. And Washington said, well, we can take that will and use it. But it wouldn't have been valid if it had been written in Washington. And so have an attorney draft your will. Okay. Don't try to write out instructions on handwritten notes. They're not going to be enforceable. Okay. In almost all cases, they're not going to be enforceable and it's going to be a problem. Okay. Don't be ambiguous as well. That's another thing I wrote down. Don't be ambiguous. Here's a rule of thumb. And I tell my clients this too. Don't keep your old wills, right? If you do a new will, get rid of the old ones. Because they cause problems, they cause hard feelings, they cause ambiguity in what you wanted to do. They don't know what mom or dad or whoever, right? Whoever wrote the will is thinking when they cut out Bobby or gave more to Sally. Don't be ambiguous. So use a lawyer to write your will or trust. Don't be ambiguous. Number three, Jimi Hendrix. Who doesn't love Jimi Hendrix? I don't know. There's probably a lot of people that don't love Jimi Hendrix, but I love Jimi Hendrix. He's a good musician. His music's really good. Some of it's better than others. He's not my favorite guy. I do like him, though. He had a large estate. We don't know how much it was. He died pretty young and in an age where he probably wasn't saving much money based on how he was living, and he probably wasn't making as much as he probably should have. He died in 1970 at the age of 27 from drug-related complications. And at 27, he didn't have a will. And there was a prolonged legal battle, of course, about his estate. It was intestate, just like Prince. And initially, Hendrix's dad, Al Hendrix, was named the primary heir. But over the years, Al made several bad decisions and controversial decisions regarding the estate, including selling some of his licensing rights and settling disputes with former business partners. And after Al's death, the estate continued to have legal battles, particularly when Jimmy's half-sister took control of the estate and he and his brother had issues, I guess. And these issues lasted for decades, right? He died in 1970. For decades later, they were focusing on control and distribution of his assets, who owns the rights, all those kinds of things. So what do we learn from Jimi Hendrix? Have a written will, right? Have an estate plan. That's going to be a goal given on most of these. So I'm not saying the same thing about everybody, okay? Because we could say, well, he needs to have a will too. Just like Aretha had to have a right, correct will or Prince. Jimmy, and these are not going to all be musical people, but we're getting there. I think of one more musician. We'll see. So what can we learn? Executor and trustee decisions, the people that you put in place matter. Okay? So you want to make sure that you put in place someone that has integrity, that is competent to act, particularly with the kind of assets you might have. Particularly if you have complex assets. So if you have complex assets, investments, real estate, business interests, intellectual property, which is mostly what they're talking about here with Jimi Hendrix and his music rights, you got to have somebody that knows what they're doing. And you need to have someone that's smart enough to find someone to help them that knows more, right? They have to be smart enough and humble enough and proactive enough to find someone that can help them and advise them, an expert, right? Like attorneys focus on intellectual property rights. That would be good for them, right? Other kinds of advisors with regard to investments, real estate, all those things. And they have to also, by default, be able to make good decisions, and they should have a track record. I did a whole episode on what to pick out, or like the traits to have or look for in a trustee or an executor. So go back and find that episode. It's maybe 10 episodes ago. So executor's a point. is important. Executors and trustees are important. The fourth celebrity we're talking about is Bob Marley. Bob had about $30 million at the time of his death. He died of cancer in 1981. He did not leave a will. What's the common thread? Not everybody doesn't have a will, though, on these. So we'll find out. Just keep listening. He did not have a will. They say it might be because he was Rastafarian, which says that the will may create or acknowledge that he's immortal. I don't know. I don't know much about that, those beliefs. So if you're interested, take a look. Under Jamaican law, his estate was divided up to with his widow and his 11 children. But what happens when we don't have a will? Significant legal disputes. He has a lot of intellectual property, had a lot of business associates. And so disputes arose over royalties and payment of, you know, rights with regard to his music and other business ventures. And the estate faced many challenges of people coming up to saying they were illegitimate children of his, which maybe they were, and rights and image, likeness kinds of things, right? Image and likeness rights. There was a time, and there still are, Bob Marley's on a lot of t-shirts, but I remember a time in like the 90s, early 90s, where Bob Marley was on like every t-shirt. Every t-shirt had Bob Marley on the front of it, you know? So I had a t-shirt with Bob Marley on the front of it. But these complicated the distribution of his estate. So that goes back to basically the same thing that we learned from Jimi Hendrix. Bob Marley and Jimi Hendrix are very similar, other than Jimi Hendrix didn't have a lot of kids or any illegitimate kids that we know of, at least. So we'll leave that one at that. Number five. This one's a bigger one, okay? Howard Hughes. And Howard Hughes is an old guy from a long time ago. Most people know him from the movie The Aviator. That movie was sort of about his life. I don't know how accurate it was, but it was a good movie. He was a reclusive billionaire. He had $2 billion when he died in 1976. So imagine what $2 billion in 1976 was. I can't do the math, but it's way more than it is now. And so, reclusive billionaire, industrialist, film producer, aviator, hence the name, died in 76 at 1970. No will. His estate included significant business, real estate, and other asset holdings. And this says, the lack of a will led to one of the most complicated probate cases in history, with over 600 people coming forward claiming that they were his heirs. There were numerous wills that were purported to be Hughes's that came up over the years. Most were deemed to be forgeries, and the estate was eventually distributed among 22 of his cousins. After extensive litigation that spanned over several decades, much of which probably was should try to find out who was who and who gets what. These battles included disputes with regard to who gets his business empire. There were significant legal costs, significant taxes, I'm sure. Also alleged illegitimate children. So no legitimate children on the paper, but there were some alleged illegitimate children. I'm sure lots of people would have liked to have been his illegitimate child when he died with $2 billion in 1976. So what can we learn from Howard Hughes? So his is super complicated. We've talked about disputes. We've talked about difficulty in going through probate and prolonged administration. But the thing that I put on for Howard Hughes was, even if you don't have children, estate planning is important. In order to pass your estate to the people that you love or want to benefit, or the organizations that you support, an estate plan is vital. And so Howard Hughes, despite not having children that he knew about, I guess, you know, should have had an estate plan. Okay. And in all cases, he's the richest, I think, of all the ones that we're talking about here today. But just make it clear, make it easy, right? Especially if you don't have natural heirs that are like intimate family members that are within your nuclear family and everything goes to your cousins. You should probably think about that. Okay. I just did an episode on estate planning for people that don't have children. So go back and listen to that one. Number six, Chadwick Boseman. He was worth about $3.8 million, so not as much as many of these others. He was a younger star actor, up-and-coming acting star from the Black Panther movie, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He died of cancer, unfortunately, at a young age. He was only 43. And he did not leave a will. And so his widow became the executor administrator of his estate. And it went through a long probate process. And really, this one seems to be actually decent. Like, his widow worked through with his parents to divide the estate to make sure that his parents got the fair share, even though technically they probably weren't heirs. Under Washington law, his parents wouldn't have been heirs if he was married. But this situation brings to light the importance of having an estate plan, even for relatively young people. I think I've done an episode on this. You should have an estate plan even if you're young. Maybe I should have put this for Jimi Hendrix because he was younger than Mr. Bozeman. But even if you're young, you should have an estate plan. Because I've given this story a couple times. This mother who lost her son a few years ago that had a bunch of digital assets. This story comes up a lot. He was a young guy and didn't really think he was going to die and did. And so having an estate plan, at least a will when you're young, makes things a lot easier. Reduces the burden on your surviving family members for sure. Let's see. Number 7, Tony Shea. And Tony Shea had an estate worth about $840 million. He was the former CEO and founder of Zappos, which is a shoe company, I believe. Died in 2020 at 46 in a house fire. And so he didn't have a will either. And so like all these others, complex legal process, difficult administration, family had to navigate his particular assets. And so this case highlights, what did we learn, I guess, to give you the right break there? It highlights the importance of having an estate plan for individuals, especially business owners with complex and significant assets, in order to ensure the smooth transition when you're gone, right? If you're a business owner, the other thing that happened with his, it turned out that a lot of his business and personal affairs were sort of intermingled and intertwined. So someone had to undo all this. And that's another episode for another day. It's like, if you have a business, make sure it's not the same as you. Okay. But for business owners, it's so important to have a business plan or a succession plan in your estate planning documents. And Tony didn't have that, unfortunately, so it was a disaster mess, sounds like. And so what we're learning here is have your estate plan, particularly with regard to businesses. You want to make sure that your successors are in place. I had a client recently where he has a trusted team member in his company that he wants to be able to transition the business to if he dies. And so he laid out a plan that, you know, he can manage it for a certain period of time, then he can buy it for a certain amount of money. You know, so this family's protected, but this other gentleman who's a team member of his is able to transition this business and actually allow it to continue to thrive for his family and things like that. So that business succession plan as part of an estate plan is critical. Number 8 is Pablo Picasso. He died in 1973, no will. He had hundreds of millions of dollars when he died. And Picasso was an intellectual property guy, artist, of course, right? He had a vast estate of artwork and properties and other assets, and he had 6 heirs, which included his children and grandchildren. And this is the thing I took from this one. This is the thing that really is shocking to me. 1973, remember, he died in 1973. His legal proceedings lasted for 6 years, which is not the longest thing. I'm sure many of these are longer, you know. But this is the thing that stood out to me. 1973. He incurred significant legal fees, reportedly around $30 million, which substantially reduced the estate's assets. And so it underscores the importance of having a clear plan. So what do we learn on this? Be clear, be organized in your plan, and make sure that when you draft your plan, you draft it so that it is ideally set up to minimize or mitigate potential disputes and legal battles. And particularly if you have a lot of assets, like with these artists, like the musicians and like a guy like Picasso, who are artists and they've got intellectual property, right? They've got stuff that they can sell, and they can make prints, and they can make recordings, and they can make, you know, best of albums and books and stuff like that for guys like Picasso. Who gets all that money, right? Who has the right to do that? Does that stuff go to your family? Does it go to your friends? Does it go to your buddy, right? Do you give it to charity? So be clear and be organized in your plan. That's what we learned from Picasso. Oftentimes his artwork was abstract. I don't know if you probably don't call it abstract, but if you look at a thing, it's not looking like a regular person. I don't know what you call his era. I'm not an art expert, unfortunately. I like looking at art. I'm not great at saying what era it's from, particularly with him. So be organized, be clear, draft your plan so you can avoid disputes. The last one I wanted to talk about is James Gandolfini from The Sopranos fame. He's been in a lot of different movies. He died with about $70 million and died in 2013 at the age of 51. So very young, 2 years older than I am now, knock on wood. He had a will, though. This one's different, right? James Gandolfini died with a will, but This will was not drafted to be as tax efficient as it should have been or could have been. And so this is the thing. The structure of his estate plan led to significant tax bill, reportedly over 55% of his estate's value, which were about $30 million. So that's more than half of his estate. And this reduced, obviously, in half or more than half, the value of his estate for his heirs. And so what do we learn from this one? Proper tax planning in your estate plan is essential. And we're not talking like, okay, well, James, I don't have $70 million. I don't have $200 million. I don't have $2 billion. Right? I don't have that money. Do you have 2 million? Do you have 1.5? Do you think you might have that when you die? If you're in those ranges, particularly in the state of Washington, you've got to plan for estate tax. And we talk about this a lot. And I think the episode that's right before this one talks about estate taxes and what we need to do in order to plan for those. And so proper estate planning with tax planning is essential, even at much lower numbers than what James Gandolfini and all these other celebrities had. Okay. And so this just shows the point. The reason I did this episode this way, and I'll give you a little explanation because we're not going to have any stories because I just gave you stories for the whole episode. No story time today. Sorry. There were a couple of stories intertwined in there. I gave you a couple stories, right? What we're learning here, though, is estate planning is important and it can prevent disputes. It can prevent costs. It can prevent taxes. It can prevent families from disintegrating. It can prevent people from having to fight about who's what, right? And whose stuff is whose. And so if you're listening to this podcast, or if you've listened in the past, you know that an estate plan is important, okay? And so take these pieces of information, these tidbits in history, and learn from it, right? Implement it into your plan. You know, we go back, you know, today we always talk about, well, we're not learning from our history. Like, we've already done this before. Why are we trying to do it again? You know, we got to learn from the previous mistakes of others, things that didn't work that others did. Take that for what it's worth, but do your estate plan. If you don't have it, do it. It's important. And so that brings us to, since we're skipping the story section, that brings us to the something good in the news section. And this isn't necessarily good. This is in the news. And everybody's talking about this. Bill Walton passed away on May 27th, just this week. And many of you know who Bill Walton is. Hall of Fame basketball player, won 2 championships at UCLA. He won 2 championships in the NBA. And then he was a commentator for basketball, color commentator, for many years after. And he's a pretty incredible guy. Like, impressive, okay? And I'm going to give you the impressive, like, stats about him. Walton was a star center in high school. He led his team to 49 consecutive wins and 2 straight high school basketball championships. Then he went to UCLA, where he won 3 straight National College Player of the Year awards. He might be the best college basketball player ever. He helped his UCLA team go on an 88-game winning streak and led them to 2 championships in 1972 and 1973. In 1974, he was the first overall pick in the NBA and went to the Portland Trail Blazers, and they won a championship in 1977. He was a league MVP the next year, but then he was hobbled by injuries. Unfortunately, his pro career was shortened. And then he finally won another championship in 1986 as a member of the Celtics in a solid backup role. He also won an Emmy in 2001 for broadcasting. So he won National Player of the Year. He won MVP of the NBA. He won an Emmy. He won multiple championships in high school, college, and the pros. And these are the other things, okay? He's a member of the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, the National Collegiate Basketball Hall of Fame, California Sports Hall of Fame, the UCLA Athletics Hall of Fame, of course, among others. And in 1996, he was named one of the top 50 players in history, basketball players, by media and other analysts. The other thing about Bill Walton that I like, and this is personal to me, I guess, Bill Walton was one of the biggest Deadheads, Grateful Dead fans there was. He loved the Grateful Dead, and he was one of their biggest fans. And there's tons of pictures. Like, I'm a big fan of the Grateful Dead, and I just like that jam band style music. Culturally, not maybe as much, but music-wise, I really like it. Culturally, it's fine. They're very friendly and nice people, but I'm not in the hippie world as much as maybe some of those people are. But oftentimes he's in the front of the concert with his hands raised, like just enjoying the music with his 6'11", I think he was. This massive guy. And he just loved that, right? And I've got some quotes. He was a quote guy. And so I got some good quotes that I'd like to share as we finish this episode today. And this one, this first one is about the Grateful Dead, because we just talked about the Grateful Dead. He says, and Mickey Hart, one of the drummers for the Grateful Dead, made a great tribute. All of them did. That he was, they were best friends, basically, which is crazy to me. It's pretty cool. He says, the Grateful Dead, they're my best friends. Their message of hope, peace, love, teamwork, creativity, imagination, celebration, the dance, the vision, the purpose, the passion of all things. I believe it makes me the luckiest deadhead in the world. So that's the Grateful Dead quote. And he's got more than that. But here's a couple others that are really good. Okay. If you're living for today, if you're only dreaming about yesterday, it doesn't work. You got to know that tomorrow is going to be better. Then you're on your way. So that's just pretty awesome. You got to be hopeful and optimistic and not just live for today, but live for tomorrow. This one's good. Never rank, rate, or compare coaches, children, concerts, championships, or congratulations. Just enjoy them all. That's a good gratitude quote, right? And it's good if you're a parent. Don't rank your kids. You know? Here's another one. No matter how good you get, there's always something further out there. So always be improving. Always looking to be better, right? Always look for the better, becoming the better you. And the final one, I thought, this one's really good. It's good for all of us, okay? Love is the single most powerful and important word and notion in culture and language. Until the power of love supersedes the love of power, we have no chance of being ever successful. Until the power of love supersedes the love of power, we have no chance of ever being successful. Let that sink in. Love is the answer, right? All you need is love if you like the Beatles. I don't know. But love really drives this world. It could. And the day that we're living today, this day and age where we're so divided politically and socially and culturally, being united in love of our fellow man, love of each other, right? Love for life, love for our families, love for our neighbor. You know, what better message is that, right? And so Bill Walton has left us, but he left us with a lot from his life that we can learn from. And so I wanted to close this episode with that. Hopefully it was something motivating, something good for you, and we can take some of these quotes and implement them into our daily lives, and we could all be better. Anyway, that's it for today's episode. I'd like to thank you for listening to today's episode of Legacy Talk. If you liked today's episode and would like to learn more, please like and subscribe for more great content. I've been your host, James Jones. To your legacy.
Thank you for listening to the Legacy Talk podcast by attorney James A. Jones. If you found today's episode helpful, we ask that you like and follow us on all major platforms so you don't miss out on the latest episode. If you have questions for attorney Jones, reach out at info@joneslegacylaw.com or visit our website at joneslegacylaw.com. Join us again next week for another episode of the Legacy Talk podcast.